And so as you recall, interaction between just two particles could be written like that. So it's a sum over all states of possible relative angular momentum of two particles, matrix element, which is the Haldane potential, the cost to have two electrons in the state with relative angular momentum m times the projector onto the subspace in which relative angular momentum is m. So this is a projector. Angular momentum m. So, and this set of VMs, so this is a sequence of numbers called Haldane pseudo potentials, and it is this sequence that completely determines the physics of the partially filled field lambda level. So let's, before we proceed to the full many-body problem, let's gain a bit of intuition about the behavior of these pseudo potentials. So first of all, we are going to deal with the Coulomb interactions, which are more or less short range, and so because of that, the pseudo potentials decrease as you increase m. Right. So if you take m prime greater than m, then generally v m prime will be less than v m. Why is that? This is essentially because if we recall what the wave function with a given relative angular momentum look like, effectively in such a wave functions the two particles are spend most of their time being distance 2 times square root of m from each other, right? And you can see that when m becomes large, the pseudo potential should be effectively determined simply by the value of your interaction at this distance, right? So for example, for the Coulomb interaction, you expect that at large m, Vm will go, right, will go as 1 over this distance, right? So it goes as 1 over square root m. You can also let's show it by the explicit calculation. So let's just calculate the Haldane pseudo potentials for the Coulomb interactions, right? So Vm for Coulomb interaction, we will just use the definition. So remember that Vm is the following matrix element. So it's m v of r m. Okay, and we can use, right, we can use the expression, explicit expression for this state that we derived in terms of z and exponential of z squared. So I will just write it like that, squared over z, right, integration and psi 0 m of z squared, and you can express it as an integral. So now let me go to let me integrate out over the angle, integrate over the angle, and now we'll just integrate over the radial coordinate r. So, and let me take this one. Right, so we'll continue here. So multiply that by the square of the wave function, which looks like that. So it's r to the power 2m, and then there is normalization factor m factorial times 2 squared over 4. And once you do this integral, you find the following relatively simple formula: pi over 4 to m minus 1 double factorial 2 to the power m factorial. Right, so 2 double factorial is simply the product of all the odd numbers which are less or equal than this guy, right? So it's 1, 3, 5 to m minus 1. Okay, and so this is the result, and if you plot the first few pseudo potentials, you find that they decay relatively rapidly. So let's just plot first, third, fifth, and so on. So they would look something like that, right? Now you can also, right, you can do a sanity check and check that indeed at large values of m, this expression obeys the asymptotics that we guessed above, right? How can you see this? So to see this, let's actually take the log of this expression. And then what you're going to see is the following, that log of Vm is some constant which comes from all these prefactors, right? So it's some constant plus, then I have this factor which is important, right? And I need to take the log of it. And let me write it in the following form. So it's going to be log of the product I equal 1 to m to I minus 1. And these guys I will combine and I'll get 2i, right? So you can check that this is indeed a right representation for this fraction. And then you can say, okay, this is a constant plus sum of logs, log 1 minus over 2i, right? So I rewritten it slightly. And you can now find the asymptotic behavior. So you can easily see that, okay, I can represent this sum, so I can separate it into, I can pick some I naught which is greater than 1 but much less than m. Okay, then part of the sum which runs from 1 to I naught will just give me some constant, and the rest will be actually log divergent in M, right? So let me rewrite it like that. So it's a constant plus sum I naught, this log, so I can call them some new constant, right? And then there is a sum I naught to M log 1 minus 1 over 2i. And okay, so now I know what to do with this expression, so I can just expand it to the first order, and I'll get that the whole thing is constant prime plus sum, right, now it becomes approximate, I naught to m minus 1 over 2i. Okay, so you see that this sum will give you a log, right? So this becomes constant prime minus 1 half log m, right? So from this you see very clearly that that this asymptotic, right, now if you take the exponent of that, you'll find that Vm is proportional to 1 over square root m, right? So this gives you a sanity check that indeed this answer is right. What we are going to see actually in what follows, that for fractional quantum Hall states, actually only the first few pseudo potentials are most important. Okay, and this is reasonable because you can see that at larger distances, of course, they decay. So you can often even neglect the pseudo potentials with a very large m. Okay, so now let's start thinking about the many body problem, right? So now we will have a lot of electrons, and and the general approach we are going to take would be the following. So we are going to think in the first quantized notation, right? So we will think in the first quantized notation. So we are going to think in terms of the wave function, many-body wave function, which is a function of the n coordinates of particles, right? And since we are going to restrict it to the lowest lambda level, we can write it as a product of some anti-symmetric polynomial, which is going to depend on the z's times this exponential factor, right? Which separates. Okay, so this must be anti-symmetric because of Pauli principle. Anti-symmetric, and we are gonna try to pick this wave function. We'll try to guess it in such a way that it introduces short-range correlations between electrons, such that effectively the probability of finding two electrons very close to each other would be very small. Okay, this way we will minimize the probability of the process where the electrons are close to each other and have to pay the energy equal to the, you know, first pseudo potential. Okay, so guess wave function which optimizes short-range correlation. Short-range correlations between electrons. Now we will also see that such a wave function would actually describe, on a larger length scale, it will describe a liquid state. Okay, so it will be very, very much unlike a crystal, which has long range order, right? So, and once again, to just gain some simple intuition about such wave function, let's ask a simple question. So let's ask what would the many body wave function of a completely filled lambda level look like, right? So what is f? What is f of z? 1 da, 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 zn for a filled lambda level. Let's put our system on a disk with a radius of square root 2m. Right, so disk geometry. Geometry, radius square root 2. Actually, let's call it m max. Okay, m max. So by remembering the radius of the orbital with angular momentum m, you can see that such a disk would host m max orbitals, right? So, or to be more precise, m max orbitals, right? And since we want to know what happens for the field lambda level, we have m max electrons here, right? So let's consider the simplest case when we only have two orbitals, right? Then we only have the only allowed wave function are simply the one with m equals 0, right? So it's just the exponential. And the one with m equal 1, so it's z times the exponential. And we need to fill these orbitals with two electrons, so to know their wave function, we need to simply take the Slater determinant, right, introduce two coordinates and take the Slater determinant. So the wave function would be a determinant of, so if it's zeroth orbital, it's 1. If it's first orbital, it's z1 to the power 1. And here it's 1, z2. Right? So it's a simple difference z1 minus z2. So it's 0 when they sit at the same point, which is reasonable. right? Because the Pauli principle effectively prohibits them from being in the same point, right? And it's a simple first order, first degree polynomial. Now you can from this you can already see what's going to happen when we have a lot of orbitals. So in this case, you right. So M max arbitrary. Then this function f of z1 zn would take the following form, which is obtained by simple generalization of that guy. So it's z1, z1 squared, z1 to power m max minus 1, right? And here we'll have the same thing for z2 until we get to the last coordinate. So it's going to be zn, zn squared, zn to m max minus 1. So this is, I'm sure some of you saw this determinant. So it's van der Monde determinant. And by recursion, you can yourself easily show that it's a simple product over all pairs of particles, difference zi minus zj, right? So it's a very simple result. So you have a product of differences of coordinates of every pair of particles. Okay, and again, this makes sense, right? So wave function vanishes whenever two particles come close for each other, come close to each other. So now, the product should go up to the number of orbitals. Yeah. So here I called it m max, right? You mean here, right?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So let's call it n, so that there is no. Let's call. Yes. Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. So now you can, so let's try to see what kind of good wave function we can make if we consider a partially filled lambda level, right? So it's clear in a sense, right, that you could consider a simple generalization of this wave function, right? So so now let's think about partially filled lambda level. So let's generalize this wave function. Consider lies above wave function, and consider f, which is again. So it has zeros whenever any two particles come together, but this would be zeros of the higher order, right? So for example, it would be simplest generalization would be to impose the requirement that there is a zero of the third order whenever any two particles come together, right? And and of course there is the exponential factor, and so intuitively, right, you expect such a wave function to do quite well with the short range interactions, because the probability of finding two particles close to each other given by this wave function decays very rapidly, right? So if I'm to ask how does the probability of finding particle Z2 very close to Z1 behaves, it will be proportional to the square of this wave function. It will go as Z1 minus Z2 to the power 6, right? So it's effectively such events are not really allowed by this wave function, right? So this gives us a hint that such a wave function might be good and might minimize potential energy, okay, just on the intuitive level. But in fact, we can make the statement more rigorous and show that in fact this wave function is a unique ground state for a special model of interactions at the filling factor 1/3. Okay, so this was intuition, but now let's make it more rigorous, right? So rigorous statement.
Question.
Yeah.
So was this for filling factor 1/3?
We will get to that. It's not obvious what is the filling factor, right?
But why did you choose 3? I don't know.
Because so you could choose, right? If I want a simple generalization of this wave function, so I want it to be, it has to look the same for all particles, right? And I want it to have zeros, right? High degree zeros when any two particles come together. Then of course the most general thing I can write is this to the power k, right?
Yeah.
And the simplest one would be to consider k equal 3, right? This is the one which is after the field Landau level. Sure. What we'll talk about will also apply to hierarchy. You can write it for 5, 7, right? But just a comment about this, this wave function wins and describes the ground state in realistic condition only for k equal 3 and 5, right? If you consider, let's say, 7, this corresponds to a very small filling factor, right? This corresponds to filling factor 1/7, where you have very, very few electrons. And then turns out it's more beneficial for them to actually crystallize and form a Wigner crystal. Okay, so which is, even though seemingly the Wigner crystal and Laughlin wave functions are governed by the same, desire of electrons to stay away from each other, but the nature of the states is very different, right? In the Wigner crystal, you break translational invariance, right? So you have long range order, right? If you have electron here, it looks sort of like crystal. And the Laughlin wave function on the large length scale looks completely featureless, right? There is no long range order. So, but this is a good question. So, and let's consider, for now, let's consider the simplest case of this. So, but now let's see how you can make a rigorous statement and how, in fact, you could have guessed this wave function, right? So let's consider model of interactions which are very short range. Very short range, so that we would put V1 to be non-zero, and all the higher pseudo potentials will be zero. Right, so this tells us we are gonna punish electrons for being in a state with relative angular momentum 1, but not with 3 or 5 and so on. This is of course very special. I mean, it's impossible to realize in any experimental system, but let's just consider it for a second. And then Laughlin wave function, is a unique zero energy ground state of this wave of this model at filling factor 1/3 is a unique ground state at filling factor 1/3. So how can we see this? So if we consider a general, general function f of z, right, z is. So let's look at this function as a function of coordinates of two particles, I and j. Right, then I can always decompose it and represent it as a sum over states with different angular momentum of these two of these two given particles, right? So it will be a sum over zi minus zj power m, and I'll have some function fm, which will depend only on the coordinate of their center of mass, right? It would depend on zi plus zj, right, over 2, and on the zi prime, where I prime is not equal to I or j, right? So now, if I want, so my Hamiltonian is positive, right? And to get whenever I have a component of the wave function in which pair of electrons are in a state with relative angular momentum one, right? I have to pay energy. So I have to, in order to keep the energy of the state zero, right? So energy is zero only if fm only if fm equals zero for m equal one and for any ij, right? Because otherwise, you know, if I have such a component, okay, then there would be average of the Hamiltonian over this component, and you'll pay energy. So this tells you that for a wave function to have zero energy, f of z should be divisible by zi minus zj to power 3, right? So I can represent it as a product zi minus zj to power 3, maybe times, you know, some other polynomial, right, which would be symmetric now. But if you put this thing to be one, we are going to show that the filling factor corresponding to this wave function is exactly 1/3, right? So for g equal one, when this reduces to the Laughlin wave function, we are filling every third orbital. So filling factor is 1/3. How do you see it? Very, very easily. So if you ask what is the state with largest angular momentum you can have in this wave function, it would be, you know, for example, for the first electron, you can have, you know, in each term of the product which can stay, contains z1, you can take z1 to the power 3, right? So be z1 to the power 3 to power n. So z1 to the power 3n. So in this case, your system size, right, is set by this 3n. This is the largest angular momentum you can have in the system. But you have n electrons, right? So therefore, filling factor, which is number of electrons by the number of orbitals, is 1/3. And now you can see that if you want to keep the filling factor at 1/3, you cannot pick anything other for this polynomial g other than one, right? Because if you, let's say, if you pick g to be some simple symmetric polynomial, right, z1 plus zn, right? Can we do this? No, because this would mean that I would have a term in my wave function where I multiply this guy by this z1, and this is out of my system, right? So this would go, this would have angular momentum 3n plus 1, right? So this is not allowed. So we've shown that indeed at filling factor 1/3, the Laughlin wave function is a unique ground state with which has zero energy, right? So this is, and you see, if you were to start from this model, you could probably guess the Laughlin wave function, but historically that's not how it happened. So historically, he just sort of intuitively guessed that this wave function could be good because the probability of finding two electrons close to each other vanishes very quickly, right? And then later on, people realized that thinking about this in terms of pseudo potential is very useful, right? And gives intuition. And in fact, Laughlin wave function is an exact right ground state of a simplified short range model. So this is good, but of course, it doesn't answer a lot of our questions, right? So you know, important question is for example, what is the energy cost to add or remove particles, right, to this wave function? So let's ask energy to add or remove particles.
Why was the total number of orbitals 3n?
Because so this wave function, right? So what is the highest power of let's say z1 you can have in this wave function? And remember, the power corresponds to the angular momentum, right? And angular momentum corresponds to the size of your system, right? So if you were to plot the density of this wave function, it will be large. Large in a ring with radius square root 2 times square root the largest angular momentum you have, right? So which is 3m. So your wave function lives inside such a disk, right? So now let me assume that I'm dealing with a finite disk, right? So let me cut it and say, okay, this is all I allow, right? This 3m orbitals, right? Then in such a finite system, so first of all, Laughlin wave function is going to live inside it, and the filling factor is going to be 1/3, right? And you see, if I were to consider a larger, right, larger system, I would have to add particles to keep the same structure of the wave function, right? Mm-hmm. But so what is energy to add or remove particles to this wave function? So first of all, it's clear that in order to add a particle, you need to pay finite energy of the order of the first pseudo potential, right? Because we found that that this wave function is sort of the tightest packing of electrons in which every two electrons have relative angular momentum larger than 3, larger or equal than 3. So if you were to add one more electron, right, you would have to pay. So let me call this energy n plus one electron minus energy of Laughlin wave function for n electrons. Clearly, I'll have to pay the energy of the order of the first pseudo potential, because I'll have to induce, right? I'll have to induce two particles which are closer to each other, which have relative angular momentum one. Right. So at least by order of magnitude, it should be of the order of v1. Now, of course, it doesn't cost me anything to take a particle away, right? Because I can take one out, and they will still be, and still I have enough space to keep them away from each other, right? So this seems a bit odd, but of course, what we did not take into account here is that in a real system, of course, we need to think about the chemical potential. Right, so in chemical potential, need to make sure that the effectively defines the number of particles, right? So if we were to plot, so energy as a function of n, right, this result tells us that, okay, if I have less than n particles, so number of particles, less than n particles, energy is zero, right? For this very special model, and then it has a kink and starts growing. But of course, if I want my system, you know, not to just lose electrons to the reservoir, I need to make sure that this is optimum number of electrons, right? So I need to add chemical potential, so which is gonna change the picture to something like that. right? So, and this looks quite unusual, right? So you see that the chemical potential would have a kink, right? So if you were to look at the derivative of total energy with respect to the number of particles, so if you come from the left, right, if you consider left derivative is going to be negative, right? And if you consider positive derivative, so n plus, it's going to be positive. Positive and finite, and both of them will be of the order of first pseudo potential. Right, so this effectively tells you that there is a finite gap for either creating electrons or holes in your system. Right, so system does not want to accommodate any new excitations. Mm-hmm. And so mu plus is not equal to mu minus, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, this property is also leads to the incompressibility of your system in the following sense. So usually, right, if you think about a gapless system such as a Fermi liquid or something like that, if you decrease its volume a little bit, if you increase pressure, right, you will squeeze it a bit. And how much you squeeze it is determined by the quantity called compressibility. But you can see that if you have a charge gap, right, it's not possible to squeeze it, because if you increase pressure a little bit, right, what can you do to your system? It really doesn't want to change its volume, because in order for it to get smaller, it would have to effectively produce an excitation with a large finite energy, right? And infinitesimal pressure cannot, of course, produce such a particle, right? So this, or you can see it formally by relating inverse compressibility to the derivative of the chemical potential with respect to density, right? And you see that if at some density you have such a jump of the chemical potential like here, right, this derivative is going to be infinite, and the compressibility is going to be zero. So this makes sense, right? Turns out that it is in fact this property of the wave function which is responsible for the fractional quantum Hall effect and for the quantization of the whole conductivity. So now we will again go back to making arguments which are related to the gauge argument we've discussed on Wednesday. So let's show that that incompressibility implies quantization of the whole conductivity. But now we are going to modify this argument such that it doesn't assume anything about lambda level being completely filled. So it will just rely on the property that there is a charge gap in the bulk. So we will show, right, that let's say you have some density in your system which depends on magnetic field, at which system becomes incompressible, right, and there is a gap to excitations. Incompressible. Then we are going to show that there must be chiral gapless excitations at the edge. Okay, and this will survive certain degree of disorder. As long as all the excitations in the bulk are localized. So, and this is how we can push this argument through. So let's consider large but finite sample, large finite 2D electron gas in magnetic field. And there is a density N or chemical potential mu at which there is a charge gap. And let's ask, how do the equilibrium currents in the sample change as we slightly vary the chemical potential? Equilibrium currents when chemical potential is varied, right? When mu goes to mu plus delta mu. So first of all, it's clear that, you know, there is a gap in the bulk. So there can be no change in the bulk currents, right? As we change delta mu. So currents can only change at the edge. So let's assume they change current can only change at the edge. And only change at edges, and this current, of course, it has to go around. So let me say it changed by delta I, right? And let me relate it. Let me use the fact that it goes around the edge to relate it to the change in the magnetization, delta M. And A is the area of the sample, right? So this whole area is A. So this is just the magnetization produced by loop current going around area A. Now I can, of course, relate this to the derivative of the magnetization with respect to mu at keeping magnetic field constant, right, times delta mu. And now let me use the thermodynamic Maxwell relation to express it as a derivative of the density with respect to B. So probably you remember that in statistical mechanics, right, when you can have these relations between different thermodynamic quantities. So if in your Hamiltonian you have something like that, so it's M times magnetic field minus mu times the number of particles, then you can relate derivative of this guy with respect to this guy to the derivative of this guy with respect to this guy, right? So by Maxwell relation, you can relate it to the derivative of the, so it's C over A dN over dB at a given mu, delta mu. Okay, but this is nothing else as the density, right? So then I get that this is C dN dB at given mu times delta mu. Now, what is this? So if I'm sitting at some filling factor, right, of course the density, right, so if I'm sitting at filling factor nu, then the density is simply nu divided by 2 pi L squared. So this is, let me write it as nu over 2 pi hc over eb, right? So it's nu over h without bar c times eb. Substituted there, you'll find that delta I equals nu e over h b cancels out. Right, delta mu. Right, so you can see, right, that indeed, if this derivative, if this incompressible density depends on the magnetic field, and of course for the Laughlin wave function it does, then you're bound to induce, if you change chemical potential by tiny bit, you're bound to change the edge currents, right? Which tells you that there must be gapless states living at the edge, right? So, and of course, in this period, right, this argument is very related to the flux insertion argument through the loop that we considered, right? And also we can of course do the last step here and link it link this quantity to the whole conductivity, right? So how can we do this? Now let's assume that we make our sample into a strip and assume that we can contact this edge state separately and induce different chemical potential here, right? Then the whole voltage will be simply related to the difference, right? It's mu L minus mu R divided by electron charge. This is whole voltage, and the current we already found, right? So current in this direction would be given by this. So it's nu E over H mu L minus mu R, right? So you get that, combining this, you get the sigma XY is simply nu E squared over H. So for Feynman factor 1/3, right, you get the fractional quantization of the whole conductivity, right? So any questions about this part? So of course important, now we must ask what happens if we add disorder, right? Because so far I've been thinking in terms of pure Laughlin wave function, but of course when you add disorder, nothing much changes, because imagine now you have some disorder potential, right? So each minimum of disorder would take one state away, right? And would localize one state. But important thing is that number of the localized state does not scale with the chemical potential, right? So, and you can see it very easily if you consider a limit where disorder consists of rare, very deep wells, right? Then each well just has localized state. It doesn't care, right? It doesn't care if you change the chemical potential. So I can still use this argument, right? And I will get that the change in currents is proportional to, again, to the same derivative, right? Which is, of course, not going to change because of the localized states, right? So this shows that, you know, if you start with a clean Laughlin state and then add disorder and change chemical potential a little bit, the whole conductivity is not going to change. And this is why you have this plateaus when you measure sigma xy, okay? So, now of course, you can ask, okay, so we started with a very artificial model, right? We started with a model where somehow there was very short range interactions, right? So why does it all hold for realistic Coulomb interactions? Right, so why does it apply for Coulomb? First argument you can make is that if you have an incompressible state in this very special point in the parameter space where V1 is non-zero, but all the higher guys are, right? And imagine you now start increasing the higher pseudo potentials a bit, right? And it's clear that the small changes in the pseudo potentials are not gonna change the incompressibility, right? Because the gap must close smoothly if it does. So this means that there is some vicinity, right? There is some set of non-zero measure in the space of parameters where which still favors the Laughlin wave function in the incompressible state. Right, so there is some, if we plot the space somehow, right, then there is some volume where it's still good. Now, how far this volume extends in the parameter space, of course, it's a separate, very difficult questions, right, which people study. Usually people study it as follows. So they consider closed geometry. So let's say they in a numerical experiment, right? So they would consider a closed geometry, let's say a sphere or a torus, and then they would imagine that there is a monopole living here, which creates a flux through the sphere, right? And then they put electrons with appropriate filling factors on the sphere, do the exact linearization of the Coulomb Hamiltonian for small systems, find the exact ground state, and then look at the overlap with the Laughlin wave function, right? And if this overlap is large, it's usually a good indication that given Coulomb Hamiltonian favors the Laughlin state, and you expect to see a fractional state. And also, I mean, it's a whole separate industry, so there are other quantities, other tests you can make. You can, you can look at the structure of the entanglement in these states. And turns out that also that the fractional states have a really, really interesting and unique, let's say, entanglement entropy if you cut it into two parts, right? Entanglement spectrum and so on. So, but this is just a side remark. So now also an important comment is that if you think about the realistic system, right, and you ask, what's going to happen if I don't restrict my attention to the zero Landau level, but also ask, you know, would I find fractional states in the first, second, and so on Landau levels, right? So and the answer to that is the following. So first of all, of course, this set of Haldane-Sveda potentials depends strongly on the Landau level number, because remember it was some matrix element, right, which involves the wave functions in a given Landau level. So if you, for example, if you go to the first, second, and so on Landau level, each one would have a different set of pseudo potentials. And turns out that only first zeros and first Landau levels support fractional quantum Hall states. Now, if you consider the higher Landau levels, then instead of fractional states, you find again states which break translational symmetry, so you find the states which are like a charge density wave. And so, those were observed as well. So in general, the robustness of fractional states is quite sensitive to the values of the pseudo potential. So in some sense, it's a separate problem to find a way to control the pseudo potentials in a real system to favor the state you like, right? So, but, okay, so we have little time left. So let's So in the remaining 5 minutes, let's very quickly discuss the excitations of the Laughlin state. Right, let's go back to our wave function. Let's discuss the excitations. So intuitively, again, let's first think intuitively, how could we induce an excitation? So we start with the wave function. And so as we will see, they have both fractional charge and unusual anionic statistics. Right, so imagine your sample, and imagine that we adiabatically insert flux quantum through the origin. Okay, so and you will see why. So well, sort of motivation for this would be the following, right? If you have, you know that if you have just a Landau level, inserting a flux pushes one electron away and leaves the localized hole behind, right? So let's see what this does to a fractional state now, right? So when you insert a unit flux, you know that this is a gauge transformation, and the angular momentum of each electron is going to increase by one, right? So then, in terms of the Laughlin wave function, this means that you need to multiply it, right? So you started with a wave function which was just the product zi minus zj to power 3, and under flux insertion, it will be some f prime, where angular momentum of each electron got increased by one. So I can describe it simply by adding a factor which is product of zk, right, over all electrons. And then I still have my old wave function here, right? So let's ask what are the properties of the quasi-particles described by this wave function. So first of all, you know that when you inserted this flux, this unit flux, right? Because sigma xy is 1/3 the squared over h. This effectively produces a circular electric field, right? And then it produces current, radial current, and the charge E over 3 is pushed to the boundary of the sample, right? So again, this is the, you can see by the generalization of the gauge argument we had, right? So you can repeat the same logic. So you can say, okay, I'm inserting flux, so I'm generating vector potential, which depends on time, right? Vector potential dependent on time means electric field. Electric field means transverse current, and then I can use the fact that I know conductivity and find the total charge transferred. Right, so this means that such a inserting a flux creates an object which has a charge E over 3. Right? So which if you think about it, it's quite surprising, right? So you seemingly did a transformation that took all the single particle orbitals back to themselves, right? But the many body wave function did something different, right? It actually accumulated a fractional charge, right? So there are other ways to see that the charge of such object would be 1/3, but we won't go into that because of lack of time. But instead, let's ask what happens when you when we have two such quasi-particles and we exchange them, right? So what is their statistics? So in this, you can see, in fact, quite easily from this wave function. So but first let's generalize it. And let this quasi-particle be not only at the origin, but at some place W. So it's product zk, product zi minus zj to power 3, right? This is for one. For one quasi-particle, and you can see that if you were to do the following, if you were to take this quasi-particle and make a loop, right, then you would, if this loop encloses n zeros, right, and not zeros, each zero would give you phase of 2 pi, right? So phase picked up during such a process is 2 pi times the number of the enclosed zeros or electrons. Now imagine that I did this in a situation where I had another quasi-particle W prime sitting in the center. Right? You know that quasi-particles means that on average there is a charge deficit of E over 3 here, right? So this tells you that on average, right, I would pick up extra phase, which is, okay, so there will be a big phase from electrons, and then there will be a phase which is 1/3, right, times 2 pi. Right, so this tells you that there is a, in fact, Betti's phase for moving such particles, right, which is fractional. So, and now if you were to phrase it slightly differently, and if you were to ask, okay, let me have two quasi-holes, W1 and W2, and what would happen to the wave function if I exchange them, right? If I put this guy here, this guy here, then you can see that this is like half a loop, right? Because when they see each other, they only their relative angle rotates by only pi and not 2 pi. So I will pick up only half this phase. So I will pick up a phase which is pi over 3. And which also depends on whether I go this way or this way, of course. Right? So this tells you that, in fact, this fractional states host this anionic fractionally charged quasi-particles, and this is, of course, something that you don't really find anywhere else. There are ways to study this in the mesoscopic experiments, sort of along the lines that we discussed in the beginning, right? So you can, for example, standard way to study the to study the properties of the quasi-particles in the fractional quantum Hall effect regime is of course by looking at the edge states. So you can consider a sample which is made to have constriction such that the two opposite channels can talk to each other, right? And there is some effectively weak probability for the particles to tunnel to the other edge and come back. And then you can study effectively the currents, the noise, and so on. And turns out that using the Landauer formalism we've developed, you can show that such experiments would can tell you about the, let's say, the charge of the quasi-particles, right? And if you want to know about the statistical phase, you can do the following trick. You can make another constriction, okay? And you can look at the interference between the process where you get reflected here and you make the loop and get reflected here, right? And then depending on whether you have any anionic quasi-particles trapped here, you would pick up a different phase. So your phase shift will be different. Okay, so this is how very, very broadly people study this in the experiment, and this is actually very much an active area. So in particular, you know, one important open question is what happens in more complicated fractional states. So can you have non-abelian quasi-particles? And I think both in terms of theory and experiments, there are a lot of things to explore. So with this we'll finish. So let's so ask questions if you have about this last lecture.
So are Laplace wave functions convenient for calculations, for example, of thermodynamic quantities?
Thermodynamic quantities like
in general, so free energy.
No, they're in general quite hard to work with.
Ah, they're
quite hard. Yeah. Right, and also, I mean, usually, right, usually if you think, so, I mean, if you think about free energy, you would want to think about the excitations, right? But of course, from the Laplace wave function, you cannot really say anything about the energetics of the excitations.
Uh-huh. Okay, yes.
Right, in general, energetics of the excitations is quite hard to study, so people mostly do it numerically. Okay. Any other question? So then this concludes our course. So the third week is off because the lecturer could not get a visa. So and I hear instead you'll get some more problems to solve for the next week.
So let's thank Dima.